Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
The Around the NFL Podcast.
Jessica.
Oh, yeah. Suitably creepy from the Chris Wessling Podcast Studio. It's Around the NFL. I'm Dan Hansis. I got heroes here. Greg Rosenthal, Mark Sessler. It is the day after ATN Homecoming from Hollywood. The live show sold out. An incredible evening with fans from throughout America. And that was, to me, at the end of it, boys, the biggest takeaway and what was kind of the coolest thing about that event.
That blew me away. There were listeners from Alaska, New York, Chicago, Bay Area, Portland.
D.C., like, Indiana.
Like the L.A. Listeners, I almost were sheepish being like, yeah, I just drove from Pasadena. It's like, but don't apologize for that. I was amazed by it.
No, I just expected it to be like a 78% like LA crowd, maybe a smattering of, you know, additional places of origin, but it was incredible. It was like one person after the next, like, flew in from all over the place. And like, we are the one thing about this show, because we'd like to go out and talk to them for a while afterwards, and that goes on for a while. I wish we could just give them more time sometimes, because it's like there's just not enough. They put so much effort into coming to the show, and it was a fever dream, and it was maybe a planning snafu to have this show occur hours later, but that we just keep rolling, apparently.
We did, or I should say I, old Zeuser deserves a little tugboat credit on this one. I reached out to Drew, 9'6", 240, all muscle.
It's a Dan Hansis shout out.
And said, we got to push back this Thursday taping.
Yeah, smart by you.
And as you could tell from my voice, we needed a couple extra hours.
The experience, though, of the live show, I think, was highlighted really in the money drop alluded to it here by the solo dance performance between Jessica and Justin Graver on the stage. One of the most awkward and painful and delightful moments I can remember.
Gravedigger, awesome work out there.
How was that for you?
Thanks. No, it was awesome to be able to share that moment with Jessica, whom I love.
The best part was that you know, Justin, as the producer, will do various mechanics in terms of how long things will be.
Right.
And once we cleared the stage for them to dance to Careless Whisper, the Wham! Classic, there was like a 2 minute, 30 second cut that Justin had a super cut. And
203.
And like, again, I had to go and hit the space bar to pause it just because like I knew like it had reached what it needed to be.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to start making everyone uncomfortable. And then Jessica.
So that was way too late for that.
Yeah. Jessica backstage after the show is like, we had a dip planned. You didn't let me do my dip.
That's Giselle. Yeah. That's Mark imitating Giselle.
Yeah, that's not her. They're a wonderful couple, but there are some stagecraft elements involved. And I think pressing the space bar might have been apt at that point.
Yeah.
Although I would have liked to see the dip. I think we all
No, it's fine. We learned our lesson. Next live show, I'll make a 1 minute cut of the song.
Okay. So. There you go.
Every live show will feature a slow dance on the stage for Gravedigger and his lovely GF. Anyway, thank you to everybody for coming out. Lakeisha was there too. It was amazing. We brought her up on stage and we talked about Chris at the end of the show. So a special night. And as I said at the beginning of that show, you know, it does make you like kind of reflect a little bit about how we all ended up here. And, you know, the famous kind of Hollywood dream, people come from all over the country and the world to Hollywood to make it. We didn't come to make it as actors. We didn't come to get into entertainment and end up on stages and doing shows for people where Jason Zumwalt's up on top of stairs playing God.
Yeah.
It just kind of happened that way, but we all did come here to achieve something and strive to be better in terms of building our career. And that was kind of a really nice payoff.
I did find it odd. At one point I was thinking, like, our first role, for Dan and I at least, at the NFL, were 3-day-a-week anonymous editors, just, you know, cutting up copy. And it's like 10 years later, we're doing like a mid-1970s variety show where it's a lot of song and dance. I'm like, I wasn't trained to do this.
Yeah,
like,
we were just smoking cigarettes and drinking rye the entire show.
Totally bizarre.
All right. Awesome. But we got a lot to get to. Because a lot of people are like, we don't care.
They don't live there at all. No.
We're not going to see you guys.
Yes. We're playing the long game here. We're building up anticipation for the next
move
one.
Move eyeballs away from navel. We shall.
Each other's navels.
And turn our attention to the greatest round of football all season. Divisional round weekend. We have an unbelievable slate of games. We're going to get to all four games. 32 teams. And then there's only eight that remain. Eight divided by two. It's four games to talk about. So let's do it. We got a friend from overseas, actually, is going to join us at halftime. Oh. We got some league news to get to, as well as teams that aren't quite ready to fire their head coach, but they got to do something. That something means other people lose their jobs on the staff, so we'll get to that.
Fall guy.
Only five head coaching changes if we've reached the end of that
cycle. But you know, it's funny because it's all obviously connected. Doesn't it feel like we have more churn in the coordinator ranks this year?
Yeah, everyone needs a coordinator right now.
All right, let's get to the games. Let's go in order. So let's start Saturday. Jaguars at Chiefs. Hamana, hamana, hamana. Greg, obviously the Jaguars got here by virtue of one of the great comebacks in NFL history, down 27-0 to the Chargers, and they deserve all the credit in the world. In a lot of ways, you could look at the Jaguars right now as house money. This is an organization in total tatters after the clown buffoon show that was Urban Meyer in the NFL. And not only did they get back off the mat, dust themselves off, become a competitive team, steal a division, win a playoff game that will not be forgotten. Now they go to Kansas City, and even just hanging with KC would feel like it would be a victory. But maybe, Greggy, after weekend one of the playoffs that had a lot of chalk, things get weird. Ooh. This could be a weird spot.
I agree, because the Chiefs have had trouble winning convincingly against most everyone. And you could even say that was true against the Jaguars when they played back in week 13. That was the last game where the Chiefs didn't have to sweat out a fourth quarter. But it was also a game, if you watched it, that the team seemed even, and there's a couple fluky plays at the beginning, turnovers and whatnot that go the Chiefs' way. And I think the Jags have the confidence right now that they can hang with anyone, and that if they're behind in any situation, they can come back from anyone. Like, their last five home games, those were double-digit or 9-point comebacks, and some of them are 17, and these are to good teams. So I think both of these teams will feel like they can come from behind, and I look at what they do well, which is get the ball to receivers in the middle of the field, get the ball out of Trevor Lawrence's hand quickly, and I think that matches up pretty well against the Chiefs. You think Nick Bolton, who's great, can cover Evan Ingram? I don't think so. I think you get it to Christian Kirk, who balled out last week, and these guys can make plays after the catch, and they're going to force the Chiefs to tackle. And I just don't know if the Chiefs are like an amazing tackling sort of sound defense. And I think you could see a lot of run after the catch, Trevor Lawrence not holding on to the ball too long.
Yeah, I mean, I think also flip side, Jacksonville's defense, which was essential here, has stepped up over, you know, the last half of the season. Josh Allen, Trayvon Walker, they've created the second most pressure among really any defense in the league, and I think that matters against Mahomes. Like, his drop-off rate when pressure is on him is drastic. It's like the second or third most among quarterbacks when he's pressured. His performance struggles at some point. So if Jacksonville can do that, now that's no easy task, but I mean, Trayvon Walker, Josh Allen last week and the last couple of weeks have been big impact players. And I think if you're Jacksonville, you also have that mental aspect that we got down last week. Everyone counted us out at halftime. Our quarterback had an absolutely apocalyptic first half. And yet you never really felt like they were out of that game. It seemed like they could climb back in.
I was wrong.
But it was when it was 27-7 at halftime, it was like
I was back in at 27-7.
I was too, because I think we've seen this happen before with teams this year. And I thought it showed me that Doug Peterson, who when he ended his career with the Eagles, it was like, all right, I'm not sure what to think about this guy. He was a coaching advantage in that game down the stretch. And I think you're going against, you know, Andy Reid, who is about to become the essentially third coach in league history to have 20 playoff victories if he wins this game. So he is as legit as Tom Landry and Bill Belichick. But Doug Peterson is someone that helped get Trevor Lawrence and the rest of the crew out of a jam a week ago, and I like that about this team.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting there's the big three in the AFC. And Kansas City, by virtue of the bye that was, let's face it, aided by what happened in Cincinnati in Week 17 on Monday night, they end up winning that last game, getting the 14-3 bye, and then watching the two other superpowers kind of struggle and have to scrape their way to get out of the wild card round. Now they have big time rest. They have Andy Reid and his coaching staff with the ability to really plan and study the Jaguars, including what they did well and what they failed at against the Chargers. And then there's, you know, this unfinished business for Mahomes. I think Mahomes is one of the great quarterbacks ever. I think he's already that. And he said himself that he choked in the playoffs last year. Like, he said he choked against the Bengals in the championship game, and he did. The whole team did in that second half collapse. I think that is major motivation for this team. And then you look at what his history is in the divisional round. And remember, when you get to this round, there's no more, you know, sometimes an underdog sneaks through the wild card round and then you end up getting kind of a free pass to the title game. But usually these games are big time matchups with superpower versus superpower. In four games on the divisional stage, 9 touchdowns, 0 picks, a passer rating of almost 115. He's one of the great ones. Then the great ones play better when the stakes get higher. I do not expect him to do anything less than, you know, contribute, you know, 30 to 40 points in this game. And then it becomes like, can Trevor Lawrence do something that we know is probably inside him, but can he do it in this spot this early in his career?
Right. I'm curious how the Jags approach it, because their defense and the Chiefs' defense improved a lot down the stretch since Week 15. These are both top 8 defenses, according to DVOA, like 6-8, and they did it in similar ways. You mentioned how the Jaguars were pressuring better late in the season. The Chiefs have too. Karlaftis and Chris Jones has just taken it to like amazing to like the best that Chris Jones has ever played, and they're getting pressure from different spots, and they're going to be trying to force Lawrence into a mistake or two. When you say like, can Lawrence keep up with Mahomes? I do think that's what it'll take. Maybe you get a turnover or two from the Chiefs, maybe not, but can Lawrence like make 2 or 3 plays that are totally off script like Mahomes will when the defense actually has the right answers? I'm not quite there yet. I still think people are putting the cart before the horse in terms of putting Lawrence in that class of quarterback. Like, to me, for instance, you know, we talked about him versus Herbert. He hasn't showed that level of play to me over a long enough period of time, and especially doing all the extra stuff. I think these two guys are really good before the snap. I think he's extremely smart and accurate for such a young quarterback, but I don't know if he does the like wow plays. He has wow throws, but I'm talking about when the Chiefs come up with some plans here with Spagnuolo where they get some free rushers or that he has to move off the spot. Like, how many great plays is Trevor Lawrence?
I think it's fair to wonder where we'd be with Trevor Lawrence had someone like Doug Peterson been there a year ago, because his rookie season was sabotaged. He's made a warp speed jump mid-season to now, but I'm with you. I think Trevor Lawrence wouldn't say he's at Mahomes levels and Josh Allen and Joe Burrow levels at this point. I do look back on that game in Week 10 because the Jaguars, they had an interception and 2 fumbles lost. The Chiefs had those 3 turnovers, and the Jaguars still scored 17 points. This offense feels different to me now because Trevor Lawrence is a different quarterback now than way back then. I really do think he is. Something else happened in that game. That was a game where Patrick Mahomes really shredded Jacksonville with his feet. And it was almost like, what can Patrick Mahomes do beyond what everything else does? And it's like, he's had games like that down the stretch where the way he's run the ball, and it's not Lamar Jackson or Daniel Jones, but it's been key first downs and a couple big touchdowns, and they've been money in the red zone. And then also in that game, that was the Kadarius Toney game where he had a 6-yard touchdown catch, a 32-yard end around, a 23 and 22-yard catch, and kind
give
of
give me
blew
some
up.
More Tony.
I think Tony is like, I mean,
Tony.
It's we saw it against
Tony,
the Raiders.
Tony,
a couple, this is your special. This is your secret
some
little
Tony.
Weapon, who's not so secret. But Jacksonville was the first team that kind of got flamed by him.
And Kansas City is healthy for this game. Relatively, they are going to be without Mecole Hardman, which clears out potentially a path to more snaps and looks for Kadarius Toney and Sky Moore as well. Remember, that was entering the season like, oh, will Sky Moore step up? Well, I think it could be Toney ultimately that is that guy that's a difference maker. Remember, Jerick McKinnon has scored in how many weeks in a row? 6 or 7 weeks in a row. And back to the Lawrence side of things, yeah, he's obviously he doesn't have much of a track record yet, but sometimes these jumps to become that guy happen on like the stages like this.
Fair.
And the last five possessions, and we talked about it on Sunday night when we were going over that crazy game with the Chargers, like the way the game played out, Greg, you made the point, like there wasn't a lot of room for error for the Jaguars in
Zero.
Terms of the ability to come back. So what did they do? Their last five possessions going into this game, touchdown at the end of the half, touchdown, 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 march inside the red zone and kick the game-winning field goal. This team is going to go in there fearless and confident. And if they get ahead, it doesn't mean Kansas City won't come back, because Kansas City has come back in playoff games from 17 down, from 23 down.
I almost
they
don't
do
want
that.
Them to get ahead, because that's
right.
what Kansas City does.
But you know what? Would it surprise you if you look up and it's 10-0 midway through the first quarter and the Chiefs have to do that again? It would not surprise me. I think this is a kind of a good spot for the Jags in terms of where they're at.
I'm with you. 8 points, 8.5 points feels like too much. I took the Chiefs to win. I took the Jaguars to cover. I do wonder if Travis Etienne is a huge factor. He was a problem in that first game. He's not great in pass protection. Spagnuolo really tests you there. I think they're going to kind of attack him. The offensive line for the Jaguars has been good, and Lawrence's superpower is definitely getting rid of the ball, but I think they'll send pressure, and if they're one-dimensional, I worry about them more. I do like, though, that Doug Peterson, and you showed it last week, is great at adjusting, is great at figuring out what the other team's doing and coming up with a plan. Whereas Andy Reid, I feel like, is just a beautiful mind that comes up with an incredible plan. And you don't think of them necessarily as like team adjustments. You think of like, we're going to do what we're going to do. And we have 50 different things we're going to do. And we're going to do it all over the game. Like, try to stop that. And you kind of forget that this is, you know, a little pupil versus teacher.
Mm-mm.
I mean, this is where Peterson, I think, learned all that beautiful scheming. So I'm an.
Are you still a pupil when you're like 60 and you've won a Super Bowl and won a ton of games, I guess. In
well,
some
he
ways.
Was a pupil. I,
right,
don't
I just mean as a
now,
as a coach like, in Kansas City. And
a dunce cap in the corner.
Yeah.
I love it because it's offensive football and you kind of expect this game to be in the 30s. I like the over.
That's what I meant about Peterson, because going hurry up in the second half completely changed what the Chargers had been doing the entire first half. And like it put Jacksonville in a great place and they play with such confidence. And as for Travis Etienne, only Christian McCaffrey has more scrimmage yards since week 15. Like, he is a factor. And I think if you can, it sounds cliche to some degree, but it's like, if you can like have longer drives where you're keeping Mahomes off the field, I think that matters a lot, because the Chiefs like to have these long, elongated drives this year with a billion plays and go 89 yards.
One quick matchup to watch is just at cornerback, the slot corner. Trent McDuffie was not around for that first game, and he's a rookie for the Chiefs who's really played well down the stretch. Might be their best cornerback and is a rookie, and he's probably getting that Kirk matchup. We gave all this credit to Lawrence, and I think it got lost in the shuffle a little bit. Like, Kirk had to make incredible contested catches, sometimes on the outside, which is not what he's known for, to win that game, and he did it. He was clutch as hell.
Can we get... Oh, Justin. Oh. Yes, sir.
Peterson is only 54 years old, not 60.
Oh yes. Mm. I don't want to age up. That's not fair.
But didn't Andy Reid once coach him, literally? Was he on the Packers staff where Peterson was Favre's backup? So I'm just... That still counts, even if they're only 8 years apart.
That's a true pupil, then.
Right. He's not boomer. He's more the Gen X Mark Sessler bracket.
No, he's not in my bracket.
What do you mean?
I mean, how far does that stretch?
Like, well, it's kind of like we think of Mark a little bit as a mentor, and we're his pupil sometimes.
In a lot of ways.
I can report with authority that you don't view me as a mentor.
Hey, can we give some love to the Jags offensive line, too? Have we given love to the Jags offensive line? You know, since week 14, they haven't lost. Okay, they're averaging about 30 points a game. That's a whole team-wide thing. But Trevor Lawrence has been sacked 1.2 times per game since this winning streak started. That's pretty big time, and that's a top five metric in the league. So they're giving him time. That big with the game on the line, they blocked up that Travis Etienne run around the end that set up the winner. I just think this team's going to be feeling it.
These are two very hard quarterbacks to sack. Not a lot of negative plays.
And I got to say, Greg, because obviously, can we bring up the standings for the locks?
Okay.
We are now in crunch time in the locks challenge here.
Yep.
And Greggy holds a two-game lead over Mark. Marv? It says Marv Sessler on the graphic.
Oh, we're back to this charade.
is there a Marv in your family? Uncle Marv?
Well, there is
one letter off.
Now there is.
Greg at 15-4, Dan and Marv at 13-6. The West
this
brothers.
Is nonsense.
West brothers have to sweep just to get to a tie, and Gravedigger just looking for respect at 9-10. I was hoping you were going to lock the Chiefs here.
Yeah,
because
I thought
was,
about it.
I think, and listen,
that was my
Mark,
first.
Well,
instinct.
I think we're going to have to be lock bros on this because
say,
I'm in the same boat as you.
Well, there's two ways to look at it.
Dan and Marv are going to need to take a decisive move here.
The only way you and I win outright,
and that's what you're looking
is
for,
is to take. Get involved with my strategy. Maybe I'm looking for the tie.
Who remembers the ties?
But
those don't
what?
Count. Those don't
the
count.
Trophy,
Dan and I had a tie one time.
We did.
I think I had a tie with
the trophy that's sitting behind me in my home studio.
Yeah.
That doesn't come in if we tie. That's just going to stay there for another year. You got to take it from me.
That's very true. I
ties are nonsense. Ties don't count. Anyone playing for a tie is essentially like Lovie Smith in week one.
All right. How about this? If you're saying that, do we want to have some type of tiebreaker Super Bowl Sunday? To make sure that we don't end on a flat tie, no matter what?
I'm willing to consider this. I'm open to that. I don't want
to
do it right now. I mean, I've got Marv Sessler right next to me.
We could bring the Pro Bowl into this.
We could
have
further
discussions. The Pro Bowl be involved in the locks.
But it probably won't come to it. But at the same time,
if you have
you and I, Mark, are two games out. We don't have to be on the same path right now, but I think you're thinking the same as me.
I already, the producer, our producer Drew said before this is, you guys are all on the same page.
We've done all of this too long. Like, we are all thinking three steps ahead. We know what each other's going to do. I was thinking this
game. Can I see that? Can I see the graphic one more time?
Yeah. It said, congratulations, Greg, at the top.
I love it. Well, you got this.
It's the one arrow that pierces Greg's armor and gets him annoyed when people prematurely congratulate him.
I would like to see a congratulations, comma, Greg, just to shore that up. But that's okay.
That's a shot at 7'8", man.
No, I mean, I don't know
who. Team, who do tremendous work.
The rest of it is tremendous. They also got my name wrong. So
you guys fixed the comma within 2 seconds, but Marv stays.
Yeah, so I think it's fair game for me to critique the overall.
All right, anyway, let's take a break. And then we'll hit the next game on the Saturday schedule.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
All right, welcome back. Let's hit the Saturday night game. And I love it. Woo-wee! An old NFC East barn burner between the New York Giants and the Philadelphia Eagles. And my goodness, and we talked about it with Pat Leonard of the Daily News earlier this week. The Giants were not happy about how the Eagles went about their business when they blew the doors off them about a month ago. But at the same time, Mark, that Giants team that told the media afterwards, we're just not at their level right now. Are they at the Eagles' level now? And I know there's a lot of mystery around the Eagles after their bye week because we've got to see what version of Jalen Hurts we have. But do you think the Giants, as they are currently playing, match up well against the number one seed in the NFC?
I don't think they match up well. But I think that team back then, one distinct difference about this Giants team, and Pat Leonard talked about this too, was that there's just way more trust in Daniel Jones in the passing game in general. He talked about the fact that it used to be Saquon Barkley with Daniel Jones as his sidecar, and it's kind of flipped now. And like, it doesn't mean that they both aren't major core contributors here, But Daniel Jones coming off the best game of his career in a money spot, I have more trust to that for them to be able to inflict a little more damage. They were wiped out against the Eagles. My concern is a couple things. Number one, like the Giants offensive line, which has, I think, the sixth worst like PFF pass blocking grade in the league. And, you know, some of that has some earlier parts of the year when they were injured and stuff too. But that's against one of the better defensive fronts in the league. And then you flip it, and the Eagles offensive line makes it really tough for guys like Kayvon Thibodeau and the rest of the crew, Dexter Lawrence, to get to Jalen Hurts, if you get the version of Jalen Hurts that we got way back then, because Jalen Hurts played one of his best games in that Week 14 wrecking of New York, and it was A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith. I mean, they absolutely had their way against New York's corners, and so has that part changed?
I think he was
changed?
The MVP front runner, in my opinion, yeah. At that point in the season, things went sideways.
I agree. Like, I feel like it seems like we haven't seen the Eagles that we knew of when you had them number one in the power rankings, when Jalen Hurts in my QB index was like riding number two and maybe about to go number one if something went sideways with Patrick Mahomes. I feel like we haven't seen that team in like three fortnights. So at this point, it's like, yeah, we just don't know what the Eagles are with Hurts, but the Giants on defense, they've gotten a little
three
better too.
Three fortnights would be...
That's 6 weeks.
6 weeks. I mean, that's a lot.
It should be easier to say 6 weeks than three fortnights.
And I was like, how long are three fortnights? I'm not sure. I thought the fortnight was 10 days.
In fairness, that Eagles game that you're talking about against the Giants was about 5 weeks away.
I think it's how long you'd stay in a fort.
I don't know where my lexicon came from.
Like, maybe when trouble struck in an old like kingdom, you'd stay in a fort for 2 weeks.
Using Revolutionary War terms still.
They still use that for like Wimbledon. They like to say,
"Well, of course
that,
they
that's
do.
A that's yeah. a
another
fortnight.
Forward thinking."
Of course they do.
I
organization
isn't Fortnite like a video game that the
well,
kids
yes.
play?
Come on,
to
yes.
you it is.
Come on, yes, come is. On, Justin. We all know that. We've got the cool dances. I think it's a tough matchup for the Giants, but I try to think, especially on offense, like how can they win this?
That was
game?
Cheeks, Justin.
I
nailed it.
Look, yeah, everyone knows I've become, you know, a huge Giants believer in the last couple of weeks. I do mean it that I think they belong here. That by the end of the season, they became one of the eight best teams in the league, like whatever the number is, eight or ten best teams in the league, that they're playing their best football right now. I think defensively, that's where the biggest improvement came from. Daniel Jones has also improved, but I think of like how can their offense match up against the Eagles' defense? How can they get over the talent mismatch? Because I think that's where the mismatch really is. Evan Neal has struggled at right tackle, including last week. Just personnel-wise, other than Andrew Thomas, they don't really match up. And I just think of Daniel Jones and Saquon running the hell out of the ball. Like, that is how they win this game. Daniel Jones didn't run much in the Eagles game a month ago, and yet the Eagles have really struggled against running quarterbacks. Their numbers, like their EPA, everything like that against running quarterbacks is actually terrible. So I think you got to use what the Eagles do. You have two great running quarterbacks in this game. You have two RPO heavy type of offenses, but the difference is one has Saquon Barkley and the other doesn't. And I think how, like, you know how running quarterbacks make their running game better, like their running backs better, like Lamar's helped all the Ravens running backs, Jalen Hurts helps Miles Sanders. I think it's the other way around here, that Saquon Barkley is so dynamic and their coach is so creative in how they use Barkley and where they put him on the field, that he makes Daniel Jones even better as a runner. And so I think you got to look at those two guys as a tandem. And the only way they win this game is with great play calling and a hell of a lot of running and those two guys going on long drives and just being better on the ground. And I think that's where Philly's weak.
I have the Giants at number 7 in the power rankings.
Above the Jaguars.
That does that include like the Lions, for instance, or no?
The Lions are now, they get moved out once you move to the divisional round. It's just 14 teams.
You should keep them like just up until like
at a certain point. We gotta let it go. We must move on.
I was trying to think who is the best team that missed the playoffs. It's probably them. Like, where would they fit in that? Yeah.
Yeah. No, the thing is, and we did in the live show last night, I threw out a what's more likely Daniel Jones comes down to earth, and all this talk about him getting a $100 million contract doesn't seem so simple a week from now. Or the Eagles are that classic and one of the great examples of a team that peaks too soon and they kind of come out flat. And the very nice. And the quarterback doesn't look right, and we'll kind of remember the season as, you know, man, if Hurts just would have stayed healthy, maybe things would have been different. I think that's in play here, and we're not going to know for sure until we see how Philadelphia uses their dynamic quarterback. I think now that, you know, we're here, divisional weekend, it's where the rubber meets the road. They're going to, I think, have their A game plan and just hope for the best. That would be, unless there's something really bad going on with Hurts that we don't know about.
They took him off the injury report, which almost felt like a showy move.
Yeah, right. And it's just like, can he withstand the punishment of a Giants defensive line that can go get it? I think, and very fairly, Dexter Lawrence got a ton of pop based on his performance on Sunday and through the week. And it kind of reminds you again, the Giants, they're just good at building defensive lines. And with Leonard Williams there and Kayvon, they have just the ability to create havoc and make players uncomfortable. Like the Kirk Cousins check down on fourth down, that was because he couldn't hang in the pocket. And it put him in a situation where he's like, do I just throw it up for grabs or throw it to that guy open and underneath and see if he can make one or two plays? Can they make Jalen Hurts uncomfortable? Can they put some pops on Jalen? You don't want to see anybody get injured, but make this guy pay for it when he tries to be physical and run the ball. The Giants have a chance to dictate the flow of the game by what they can do up front.
I'd like to think they do. I mean, I also think Azeez Ojulari, who will be on the injury report, Brian Daboll said he was out there for a walkthrough. We'll see what he can do, what version of him you get. Lane Johnson back for the Eagles. I think that's huge. I mean, they're a different...
What version of Lane Johnson do you get?
The version of him and Hurts almost feels like the biggest X factor in this game.
I think that's why we don't know, because I'll go back to the fact that, like, for all this stuff, the way that the Giants have evolved, how have they evolved to stop Devonta Smith and A.J. Brown, who wrecked them in that game? I just don't see where that's changed. And if Hurts is healthy, like... That to
well,
me
they
is
have,
like the
they have
kind
better
of thing
players though. Adoree Jackson and Xavier McKinney are their two best players in the secondary. They were injured throughout this season, and their return, like, really, I think, helps out that secondary.
Might.
I think about that pass rush that you mentioned with the Giants, and like, this isn't the Vikings they're going against. This is a future Hall of Famer potentially. Wow, they put that on way too early for Jason Kelce, but he'll get considered. Not early in his career, just I haven't thought about it. But he has, like, the numbers and the all pros and all that to do it. He's at center, a good interior line around him. You know, a very popular podcast, executive produced by our old producer, TD.
Yes.
With Jason Kelce. And so it's not the same matchup. Garrett Bradbury in the Vikings offensive line, no pop, no podcast, no Hall of Famers.
I see something happening in this game. And, like, I picked the Giants to win in overtime. And I think they're going to hang around and make this. This is going to be like a point of departure for Brian Daboll's Giants that I think goes win or lose. You go into this offseason with more hope around the New York Giants than we've seen in a million years since the Super Bowl. But because they're coming off of a Daniel Jones day where he shredded a Minnesota Vikings pass defense that is the worst in the league, and you pair that with the way that we've viewed the Eagles for 2+ weeks, it's like, oh, maybe they're not the same team. Like, what's going on with them? Like, they're not impressing us. I'm not sure any of that is actually factually relevant to this game.
Wait, but you're not going to bring up all of this when you retweet the Giants' social media account pointing out you're the only person that picked them.
Yeah, of course. But I said that I picked them, and I'm going to roll with it because it's exciting and fun. But I just think the Eagles are getting a little looked past right now. Mm. I mean, they were dominant for 87% of their games.
Yes, they were. I need to see that team again. And we just saw with their division mate, the Cowboys, another team that we have far less reason to trust based on their recent history. They hit the pedal to the metal as soon as the playoffs started and looked like a different team. A little, maybe this is just as my New York Jet fan scar tissue here. Like I said, my old man, dad, hates the Giants, but he's still in that market with the media and the fans all around him. I moved to California.
I am a big Keith fan.
Thank you, Mark, as he is of you. I came here, and I lost all that Giant vitriol. But then, like, in the text threads with my buddies back east, they're really feeling themselves. Greg would hate it. The Giants fans and the way they talk about the quarterback is as if they've now found a generational talent in Daniel Jones. And I'm just going to – a little bit of cold water, okay? When did everyone start talking about Daniel Jones making this big leap? It was starting with Christmas Eve. It was – I know he kind of got better as the season came along, but all this talk about, like, now the offense runs through Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones is the best player on the offense. Daniel Jones is – he lit up Minnesota in Minnesota, absolutely walked over a Colts team that doesn't even deserve to be in the league right now, and then did it again to Minnesota. Those are that's bottom of the barrel in terms of defenses and schemes right now. And to now ask him to go against the Eagles. If this guy balls out against the Eagles, I'm going to shut my mouth and be the first one to sing this guy's praises. But I'm a little concerned about the Danny Dimes hype against how he's built up that hype in the last month.
It's totally fair. This is a raging litmus test that would change perceptions about him forever if he went out and did the same thing.
But doesn't it feel like people have already made the judgment that he's
jumped? I feel like I've had some Daniel Jones stock from the beginning. I wrote a regrettable long season. Wasn't quite a long offseason long form, but it was close about how excited I was about him and Drew Lock. I think he's been like rock solid all along.
And Drew Lock? Maybe you don't have to surface that article.
I'm saying it was regrettable. I've taken fire for this article on Twitter quite a few times.
I'm stupid.
And I am stupid. But the Daniel Jones part of it, I think he's always been better than people gave him credit for. And I think the surrounding talent and certainly the coaching has really
elevated. I recall you, Greg, also absolutely. We got into it after a Monday night game when you fried Daniel. I said, I like Daniel Jones. He's a little spicy. And you were like, he's the worst quarterback. He's one of these. He's the worst quarterback in the league.
You're a little erratic with your Giants takes right now. You're kind of all over the place.
You are. I think you're trying to get in on this and you're struggling because it doesn't. And, you know,
I mean,
be
doesn't
organic.
Suit his
no, we don't. We're not buying this. We're not.
Greg-ness.
Wait, you had a think piece about Drew Lock when he was going against Geno Smith as Seattle's quarterback.
It was more than 2 years ago. It was an off-season piece that I was excited to watch them coming out of.
I want an oral history on this piece.
That's fair.
Their rookie season, and you're right. I have been a little all over the place, like with this Giants pick. And you mentioned the Cowboys before, with this Giants team. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the Cowboys before. And the Cowboys, I think last week, it was a good example of a team like you were looking at what had happened recently, and no one was really as focused on, like, one team's 12-5, and one team's 8-9 for a reason. One team's loaded a top five offense defense on both sides of the ball. And I think that's the case here with this Eagles team, even though I think the Giants belong in this game.
Uh-oh.
And I think that they're going to survive. I don't think they can cover Dallas Goedert. I don't think their linebackers can play a lick. And I'm turning back around. I'm the heel. Let's go, Eagles. We're locking it up.
Greg is he's growing his craft as a showman. I'll give him that. Because he
helping.
Just went like kind of WWF 1989 wrestling.
Are you insinuating that you were the hero before this? You were well, baby face? I don't know if that's your
when
role.
When it comes to picking the Giants games in this weird
What is more
world?
Fun for the Lock Bros than to embrace this Giants team as our lock-off with Greg?
The only thing that does annoy me is if we lose this lock, Greg gets to saunter through Super Bowl Sunday without a care in the world.
Yeah, but we're at that moment.
It's the crucible.
He's gonna if he wins
this
it and we go pick
moment.
No matter what else, it doesn't matter. So
all right, you ready?
We're doing it.
On three?
Yeah.
All right. On three. 1, 2, 3. We're gonna lock it up. Let's go, G-Man. Let's go.
I mean, who's the showman now?
Let's go.
Uh oh.
I am making this a double lock off because I'm going to lock the Eagles in this one.
That's good.
I don't like this, Justin.
It's a tag team.
So the guy with like the 420 winning percentage just aligned with Greg. Good.
But Greg, the thing is, you can't go now change to the Chiefs.
No, I thought about how all the ways this show could go.
Let's go, G-Man!
This felt like the most exciting
this
ending,
is the best.
Which is I felt like you guys would come with me on this.
This is fantastic.
We all could do it. Make
I am
it the big
emotionally
game.
Involved in this lockdown.
Yes. And if you guys want to, someone just got in my ear, I believe he's 9 feet tall, and said there's some interesting stuff in that Drew Lock article if we want to surface it at any point. Maybe
Jeez.
That's a... I don't know. There's some people working against you behind the scenes.
But
you brought it up.
It's on NFL.com. I can't hide from it.
I mean, I think we all have a few things on NFL.com that are problematic.
I want to. Yeah, I think so. Well, actually, no. They redid the content management system and wiped all our bylines.
I had like a 2,000-word
entire careers.
Like a 2,000-word write-up on Kim Kardashian having a crush on Tim Tebow. That's not the way to start your career here.
Where's your life's work, Dan? Oh, I don't know. It's lost in the digital abyss.
Oh, they changed CMSs, so I don't exist anymore.
I think it's like a Julia Roberts movie in 1993. All right. Let's just pick the games before we're going to take a halftime break here and visit with a friend. What do we have? Jaguars-Chiefs. What do we have for scores there?
I had the Jaguars covering and losing in the 30s.
I think it's going to be Chiefs 27, Jaguars 21.
All right, I'll go Chiefs 38, Jags 28, and Giants Eagles. You know, that my whole Daniel Jones thing, I kind of, you know, I believe what I say typically on the show. Even it's not always right.
That can wait a week.
I'm extremely apprehensive about Danny Dimes here, but it's too late to back out now. So, yes, the Giants in a classic again. And I've been, you know, watching the Giants for 30 years, and these Giants playoff runs, they usually don't go one win and out. They take on a vibe. Like midway through that Vikings game, you knew it. You knew the Giants were going to find a way, because sometimes, again, same thing with the Chargers on the other side. You could change the players, the management, the coaches, but some teams, they just have this thing that sticks to them. And the Giants go on these memorable runs. They're going to win another very close game. I'm going to say 24-21, the Giants locking it up.
The 86 and 90 teams were dominant. Punishing operations under Bill Parcells and Bill Belichick. The two Eli Manning teams, though, you are so right. You get vibes with this team. I'm not saying that they're the equivalent talent-wise, but those teams went into the playoffs with shaky records, just squeaking in, and then some magic took over, and it was like, we don't care who you're playing. I kind of feel they've got that thing. Maybe it's next year if it's not this year, but I picked them in this fantastic thing that happened in our picks thing online on Twitter, 26-20 in overtime, which means Saquon Barkley rips off like an 84-yard touchdown run after the Eagles go three and out on their opening overtime possession, and New York moves on.
You know, I didn't feel like amazing about either of the Eagles or the Chiefs, which were the two obvious ones. I had the Giants covering on the game picks 29-22. Like a Giants win would not shock me, but I think the Giants have way more weaknesses. I think it's on defense, especially those linebackers, just picking on those guys. Guys with Sanders and Goddard.
And, you know, while we're on the subject of predictions, Mark, Greg brought it up on the live show, and I feel like I should bring it up now that, you know, the Bucks, the NFC South winner, did not win a playoff game, and yet you did not surface that information. You didn't take the L on the Monday show and a Tuesday show, and I thought maybe this is something I...
Well, I didn't lock it up.
To address.
I didn't lock it up.
You spent like 15 different shows talking about it. That's more than a lock.
I'll be honest. Like those Sunday night shows sometimes, like I want you to believe me. I forgot to.
It was the Tuesday show.
All right. Well, especially by Tuesday. I forgot to. But you're right. So you're seeing where my mind is. I'll take the L on that. I should have done that, because if I'm going to
would you have brought it up if the Bucks won?
Of course. It would have been more on my mind. But I would say this, that like if I'm going to walk around, prance around the studio telling Greg to be more of a showman, I've got to take the L's with the W's. So that's on me, and it's a learning point.
All right. Well, that's
I took the air out of your
integrity.
Tires. What can you do now? You can't.
You didn't back down on stage in front of the sold-out crowd. But this is nice. That's
a different kind of crowd. You just have to keep, like, you know, you don't take punches. You keep throwing them.
Kind of crowd.
So it was. Was it not?
It was a great crowd.
So there were one or two people in there that were a little too liquored up. There was one gentleman that just kept shouting at one point. It was like.
There's always one. Right. Way more in England. I mean, I don't know if the people of England ever stop drinking. I believe that country is perpetually inebriated, and I'm cool with it. But it's sometimes you get like we tried to do 2 years ago, back to back live shows. It was when Mark wasn't with us. You were ill, Mark, and it was Greg and I. And by the second show, the people of England were so drunk. London was so underwater with ale that we couldn't even hear ourselves in conversation. It's a little different in L.A.
I think we could ask our halftime guest about that.
Yes.
What a segue.
Let's take a break and talk to one of the very drunk men of London.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
All right, welcome back. I mentioned we were going to have a buzzed Londoner joining us now. And here he is. God save the king. God save Henry Hodgson. Welcome back to Around the NFL, our good friend, who we miss dearly in the States, but we know you have more important things to handle now, Mr. Responsibility.
Hi, guys. I miss you guys a lot as well. How are you all doing?
I don't know about your nickname going from Handsome Hank to Mr. Responsibility. That seems like a bad life.
Not stick
switch.
With the prior. Yeah. It's still true. The prior is still true. Yeah.
Hank, we are stopping down our preview for a little halftime assignment because we want to share. We have this great, passionate overseas listenership. And
Rabid? Is it rabid or rabid? What do we go for in America?
Listen, I think we're having rabid, another cultural disconnect.
It would be rabid here, but I agree. I kind of agree with your
rabid.
Well, you're from Surrey, so I need to be on my
naturally.
Side.
Dan only likes the American dictionary, not the English dictionary.
That's
we got over this.
That's true. Anyway, rabid is the correct pronunciation. Let's get to it. Let's share the game, the designated home teams, Hank, for the international games.
The designated teams.
International games 2023. Let's bring that tune up again, that classic national anthem.
Classic.
Iconic, even.
Historic.
Did I like God Save the Queen better? I thought it had a little bit of little pop to it.
A little more King, little more kind of hero
meat on the bone.
Yeah. Song.
King, save yourself.
A little more feminist.
Yeah.
But time marches on, right, Hank?
It sure does.
The National Football League has announced.
I think if we recall this time last year when we talked about this, Mark predicted that there may be a change in Mark.
You know what?
A changing of the guard.
I mentioned that even before the show. Like, it happened very soon after
it
that,
it was
actually.
Weeks before Henry. He basically did it himself.
Yes. Mark, your sentence is to watch The Crown all the way through this entire weekend.
I have no predictions about Prince Charles, who is young and vibrant as far as I can see.
I would not say he's young.
Or vibrant.
Let's get
I
into
think we
it.
We should move on.
Yes. Yeah. The NFL announced 5 teams set to play in the 2023 international games. The Buffalo Bills, the Tennessee Titans. Hey there. Gravedigger. Jacksonville Jaguars, of course, the Kansas City Chiefs, and New England Patriots will all play home games. Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, the Hot Toddy, the Big Tot, will again host 2 of those international games. The Jags will return to their home away from home, Wembley Stadium, as a part of that multi-year pact. And how about that? Finally, Henry, your people, after all these years, the Jaguars being the designated team, and it's like, oh, the Jaguars are our team. Oh, the Jaguars are our team. What a treat for us. Now it actually is cool, so that's great.
It's always been cool. It's exciting. This will be the 10th year in a row
you know
they've played in the UK. We've embraced it. No, I actually don't know.
I mean, when Blaine Gabbert's coming over. Yeah.
It's exciting that they are playing in a playoff game this weekend alongside with the Bills as well. So two of the 8 teams playing this weekend will be playing in London next year.
Yeah, so the Chiefs and the Patriots are in Germany, Bills, Titans and Jags in London. I am always impressed and surprised that the Jaguars fan base in London in the UK is a real thing, and I got to think this run kind of takes it to another level. Are there like a lot of Bills and Titans fans? I mean, really, are there any Titans fans outside of Tennessee in the studio?
Ouch. Jeez.
Wow.
I don't know.
Wow. That's a tough one.
Greg took that to an interesting place.
I know. Lots of people excited to see the Titans. I didn't know if that was a question for me. I thought it was more
nobody knows what that was, really.
I don't know. It all felt like too nice. And then,
I will say this, though. Like, the lineup, I mean, we only know half the lineup, but it's like, I can think back 6-7 years ago where it's like you'd struggle to send competitive teams to London. You'd get, these were not always A matchups. They're B matchups. These are premier teams, and that happened this last season, too. So I would ask you this, because we always get asked this when we go to London, and it's like, we don't really know. There was like, what will football look like 10 years from now? It's like, well, we would love to see a team in London, but like, you know better than anyone. Where is this going? Like, where will we
What's
be
the future
in 5,
of
10
sport?
Years? Will it look different than this?
I mean, I think it could do. There's definitely, I think the biggest issue is always like the inventory. How many games can we actually take overseas? Yeah. But, you know, our goal is to put on the best possible experiences. And then if a team wanted to come and play in London, if they wanted to move into the UK and play permanently there, then we'd have the fan base that could support it. That's the goal.
You could crank it up from 3, though.
All we can do. Yeah, all we can do though is just make sure that what we do, the games that we put on, everything else that we do in the UK puts us in the right position if a team were to want to take it to the UK.
I always thought you could have at least like an 8-game slate, like any
right. We're at
any
five
team.
Now. Right. We're pretty
yeah.
close.
But I will say the idea that I personally, this is just a me thing, a Mark thing. Like it's now wake up at 5:30 in the morning to watch this game, and then there's three. It's like 17 hours of football on Sunday. I love it. It's fantastic. I'll try to learn to speak like you, Henry, which will rise me up through the org chart. But like, I don't know. It's a lot. It's fantastic. It's great.
Finish your thought.
I just like Sean Payton talking trash about the AFC South right. this week, and then he stopped himself.
I just do think it's like coaches in general. The few times you've asked coaches about London, I wonder if a culture change happens here where it's like they don't want disruption. I think it is a bit of a disruption. The players seem to embrace and love going to England. It's like the coaches need to come around and realize like this is your sport. You got to grow the game. I do mean that where it's like it's a good experience, but it's like some of them have a weird attitude about having to take the week and go there and do all that business.
They do. I mean, there's definitely a strong correlation between the coaches who have that feeling and the coaches who lose the games there. And then the coaches who win say it was a great experience and we'd love to do it again. I've noticed that correlation, definitely. I would say, that 21 weeks of the year that the fans here in the UK and Europe, everywhere else in the world, up until all hours of the morning during the NFL playoffs, there are fans in the UK and Germany, watching games until 5 o'clock in the morning. So if once in a while some teams could come and coaches, could be okay with getting up early in the morning, I think it would be okay.
Pretty amazing. This will be the first Bills time in London, right? Have they been there?
They played before. So last year we checked all the boxes. The Packers were the last team to show up to London. The Bills, I think, played in 2015.
Okay. Josh Allen doesn't count.
Connor Orr and I went to that game, actually, Jaguars-Bills. It was a Rex Ryan, very very bizarre game where the Jaguars were on fire and Wembley was on fire.
It is nice, though, to have Josh Allen going over to London. You got Patrick Mahomes heading to Germany. You used to be the VP of all international. Now you're more focused on the UK. Is there a friendly rivalry here with like who gets the better games and whatnot?
Yeah, there's a friendly rivalry. We want to make sure that people in the UK have the best possible time and the best game. So yeah, I would say friendly rivalry is a nice way of putting it. That Zappy game in Germany is going to be a big one for Patriots fans.
That's your Dolphins fan coming out, and I love it.
Henry Hodgson, general manager of the NFL UK. Whoa, the job titles keep on going.
It oozes power.
Oozes power, and I've stated this numerous times, both in print and to you personally. When the NFL has a Super Bowl in London, that halftime show must be the Oasis reunion.
Noel and I talked about it recently when I managed to spend some time with him, and he is very excited about that opportunity.
Wow. That's actually true.
He hung out
on Shad Khan's super yacht with Noel Gallagher, and they talked.
I believed
it.
And
Noel's
an
NFL
fool.
Fan, legitimately. Anyway.
Big Cowboys fan.
Hank, we love you. Thank you for this information. Please, and we always need your help, get us back over there. Not for the game.
That's what it's already started.
For dinners.
Let's get you there. Yeah.
Yes.
dinner and a live show.
And yes, we love you, buddy, and thank you for taking some time and get back to your ale.
I will be.
Good right. to see you.
There
see
he guys. Goes.
See you, Henry.
Henry Hodgson, general manager.
I trust his celebrity anecdotes because one of the first times I met him, he told a story about how he and his friends, when they were younger and they had been out, I think, drinking late, and they were had sort of a hangover earlier in the day that Chris Martin and Gwyneth Paltrow went before they had
Hank is basically the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
He's that, but London. And like high London culture.
This was before they had the mutual parting, whatever it's called.
Conscious uncoupling.
Like Gwyneth Paltrow scolded Henry and the rest of the lads for their ways, their parting ways. Yeah.
Yes. Many years ago. Henry, now an upstanding gentleman of the highest esteem. Let's go. Let's do a quick spin around the league before we get back to the championship games. The divisional games, as we said, there's less head coaches that are biting the dust, but there's always got to be someone that pays the price for teams disappointing, and we're continuing to see coordinators bite the dust. So this is the latest. Ravens and offensive coordinator Greg Roman part ways after 6 seasons. There was 1 year left on Roman's deal. There's an I think it was out there. It was a team option. So essentially it was Greg, take a walk. And we have, I think, do we have John Harbaugh? Because this story, remember we talked about, do we need to be talking about Lamar Jackson and what the saga is? Yes.
Yeah, last episode.
Yeah, when there's news.
When there's news. Yeah. And I think today, Thursday, to me, smells like a reunion will happen with Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. Here's what John Harbaugh had to say.
Lamar Jackson is our quarterback. I mean, he's been our quarterback. Everything we've done in terms of building our offense and building our team, how we think in terms of people and put people around him, is based on this incredible young man and his talent, his ability, and his competitiveness. You know, he and I were talking today, too. And one of the things about Lamar that, to me, stands out, he's an incredible competitor. I mean, Lamar Jackson, all he wants to do is win at everything he does, you know.
I thought that was telling. You're right, Dan. I thought that was newsworthy. They said that Lamar would be involved in the offensive coordinator decision. It was interesting to see Lamar Jackson retweet, a quote tweet, something out there that pointed out how he had been in a pro-style offense in Louisville, so mm-hmm. a little different than kind of what Greg Roman had been running. And that, to me, tells you that, like, he's not going anywhere. If they don't want him to go anywhere, he's not going anywhere, because at the very worst for them, they could just put a second franchise tag. Then the ball's in his court a little bit, but he would be making, I think, over $45 million. I don't think he would mind that.
The Ravens are so well run. That's the reason why they've always been relevant, in part because they handle situations the right way almost always, and they're doing this the right way. They're like, all right, obviously things are not good with Lamar. How can we fix this? All right, let's get rid of Roman. Let's make sure he knows we are open to changing the offense, how he wants it to be changed, get him involved. It's things that teams that aren't run well don't do right. And it seems like easy stuff, but it very easily could lead to bitterness. And we'll see. Maybe this thing still devolves. But it just feels like between those comments, what DaCosta said, and then Lamar, his quote retweet there was telling to me in general.
Yeah, I mean, doing things well also is having the press conference where you give concrete news. Like, why? That's why we're talking about Lamar Jackson at the right time to diffuse some of this, because they are run really well. But like a week ago, or coming off of Lamar Jackson not showing up to their playoff game, I think things were getting a little strange. And so you've diffused a bunch of that, which is good. I mean, we're seeing that Justin Herbert's going to get a say in who replaces Joe Lombardi. And I think if you're Lamar Jackson, the Greg Roman experience probably has run its course. And I don't know if they did this just for Lamar Jackson. It certainly has a lot to do with him. But he should have a say in who he wants to coach him, because that's part of a long-term agreement with a star quarterback at this point in the NFL. The one thing about Greg Roman, I know his offenses in San Francisco and here, they start to stale. I mean, we all see that. But he coached up Alex Smith in San Francisco to incredible levels. He made Lamar Jackson an MVP. Lamar Jackson did too, but that offense, they really used like the better parts of what Greg Roman
does.
That
Kaepernick stretch too.
The Kaepernick
right.
to the Super
He'll
Bowl.
Get another
just
job
Greg
quickly.
Roman does. It's not for everyone, but he does have a track record of maximizing quarterbacks in the right spot.
I'd take him.
With all the great running quarterback talent around the league, he should have a job. They were quick to point out in their statement saying bye to Roman that he has set at least 26 different records in the NFL. And I was like, what? I want to know what those records are. And the number 26 well, just struck me as
that's statistic.
Like good records? I'm assuming
yes, good records. Yeah. Saying, yeah. 2019 was like an NFL offense unlike we've ever totally sure. seen in the modern right. era. And that's where a lot
there
of those
was like
records came from.
A stats intern for the Ravens got called into the office and like, hey, we're going to fire Greg, but we need you to pull up some really compelling positive data about him because we're a classy org.
I had a pizza with Greg Roman at the Indianapolis airport that one time.
Did.
In fact, Henry Hodgson came and joined us.
Have you reached out to him to extend your condolences?
I don't, that was half a decade ago, and I don't think our friendship really was cemented to beyond that time.
That is the classy way to fire someone, unlike – and I know yeah, the social media accounts aren't the ones doing the firing, but it's really gotten on my radar lately that they put a huge sad – picture of the person who got fired, in this case Byron Leftwich, but I think Roman too, and then they just put a huge fired, like in massive like we don't need to
we
do
don't
that,
need that.
That's an
these are from the same companies that have had layoffs recently, and I'm just thinking like you don't need to have a huge graphic of like fired with the same face, and then all these like Like,
that's why we call it New Horizons.
Right. All these losers in my mention are like, oh, you're getting soft. Like, so soft. Like, the media is so soft these days. You can't report the facts.
He was fired, but I understand your point.
Just like fired.
All right. Also fired. The Buccaneers have dismissed offensive coordinator Byron Leftwich. Not just Byron Leftwich. Again, Todd Bowles survives. But Bucs leadership said, you know, and maybe Todd, I don't know. A lot of people got to go. And it's not just your OC. In addition to Leftwich, five assistants were dismissed, including their running backs coach, Todd McNair, assistant defensive line coach, Lori Locust, and three others retired, including quarterbacks coach Clyde Christensen. Also, the Dolphins part ways with Josh Boyer after three seasons as their defensive coordinator. That comes along with the departures of safeties coach, outside linebackers coach, the assistant linebackers coach. So big changes there as
he went down swinging.
He did. Yeah. That was an interesting game plan. He had some of the pretty aggressive
wild
play calling there by Boyer against the Bills.
It kind of worked, and then it absolutely didn't work in moments. It was just very much risk-reward.
Well, it's one of those that he was on the previous staff. He was a Patriots guy, and I guess McDaniel can go get his own player. It's just interesting. McVay also had fired five coaches, and two others left with the idea that like they probably were getting fired before they left. So that's seven new coaches on the Rams, too. So like a lot of these organizations making huge changes.
All right, there you go. You're caught up. Let's move to the Sunday games, and let's start with I think the game of the weekend. It is to me the two best teams in the AFC, the Cincinnati Bengals and Buffalo Bills. Two teams with a lot of unfinished business themselves. Of course, we know Cincinnati came so close, oh so close, to winning the Super Bowl last year. Went down against the Rams. And we also had the Bills, who, of course, lost one of the all-time playoff shootouts against the Chiefs. Those final, 12 seconds after the Josh Allen touchdown pass that led to a heartbreaking defeat in overtime. So these are two teams looking to get over the hump. And, of course, when this game kicks off, Greg, it will be 20 days since the Damar Hamlin incident. Mm. When these two teams had what seemed to be a huge regular season showdown to see who was ahead of the other, and that game never was completed for obvious reasons. So now here they are again with the stakes at their very highest.
It struck me last week just how quickly like the NFL moved on, and we all moved on, and I think that was helped immeasurably by the great outcome in DeMar Hamlin's life. But I'm thinking it on some of these huge hits over last weekend and everything. And it somehow it feels, I don't know if right's the right word, but the fact that these two teams get to play here in the divisional round, I know the Bengals maybe aren't thrilled that this game is in Buffalo. I think that's a silly argument, but it does feel right that we get to see which team is better here. And I think for Josh Allen to be better this week, to be more consistent, I think it's going to have him being more patient. I just think he's going to have to run the ball more. I don't think the Bengals are going to do what the Dolphins did a week ago and just go kamikaze. Maybe they'll blitz a little more, but that's not really what they do. I think they're going to be asking Josh Allen, A, to he's going to have to run the ball a lot, I think, to win this game, and B, to like progress the ball slowly down the field and see if those secondary receivers like Cole Beasley, like John Brown, like Khalil Shakir, can step up and not really believe that this team can be patient enough to do a 12-play drive without making big mistakes.
Yeah, I feel like with Josh Allen, we've week after week seen a flood of turnovers in key spots, and yet the good parts of Josh Allen have allowed the Bills to work out of it. He had seven big-time throws last week against the Dolphins, which is the most of anyone all season. I mean, there were a couple deep shots that...
Wow, that surprised me. That was the most of any quarterback against an opponent. Well, that goes back in some way to Josh Boyer.
He had a great game. It kind of was a
Boyer kept on challenging him.
Well, Boyer drove him crazy, and they created turnovers. But then you had like even 50-yard completions that were, you know, suddenly not a completion. But it's like Josh Allen worked his way out of it. I wonder if this is the game, though, where like, because I think we all sort of felt like if you could keep doing that, it's going to come back to bite you and the Bills at some point, because you're going to get to playing better and better competition. The Bengals' red zone defense has been awesome. Over the last five games, they have stopped opponents on 7 of 16 red zone drives. Four of those, and that's at no touchdowns. Four of them have come with 0 points, whether by turnover or on downs. Mm. And you look at a Buffalo offense that has a league-high 7 turnovers inside the 20. No other team.
Seven.
No other team had more than 5. And a lot of those are on Josh Allen. He does all the good stuff, but it's just like the Bengals' strength right now matches up with the Buffalo weakness that I think Buffalo needs to be more patient. Like you said, Josh Allen needs to just look at the field a little differently. I look at this offense and say, you look at what we just talked about, Daniel Jones, and the Brian Daboll effect on Daniel Jones. He has 7 fumbles this year total, which is, or 6, Daniel Jones, which is way lower than in any other season. He's not that turnover machine. He's had way more rushing attempts. They've turned him into the maximized version of Daniel Jones, where I think we're getting a Josh Allen who somehow seems to have gone back a bit, back to the season before his evolution. Not with his big plays, but just that he was super clean when he was at his heights under Brian Daboll, too.
It's gotten to the point where Josh Allen's like keeps telling us this is who he is this year. We got to believe him and no longer be surprised when there are multiple turnovers. And then it becomes about how does the other team react to that? And he had 3 turnovers against the Dolphins. They turned those 3 turnovers into 18 points, and it's the only reason that game was competitive, because Miami with Skylar Thompson could not move the ball. I believe the Bills gave up 1 touchdown drive on defense legitimately. And so that side of the ball, I'm not worried about. It is the Allen thing. You mentioned 7 turnovers inside the 20. He has 22 turnovers overall this year, Josh Allen. He's got 16 picks. Both of that leads the league, the 22 turnovers. And it's just like, how does that version of Josh Allen, if that happens again against a better team, can they get away with it? Now, the other side of the ball with Cincinnati is I trust Burrow more than I trust Allen right now. But at the same time, I trust Allen's offensive line more than I trust Burrow's. We know the injury issues that Cincinnati has. And yet, Greggy, this would have been the game. This would have been potentially the Von Miller game. And the fact that the Bills don't have their closer against this obviously compromised Cincinnati offensive line that could be missing 3 starters, I think that is a big factor in this game as well. Can the Bills, are they built to take advantage of the weakness of Cincinnati's offense?
They should be. Greg Rousseau's still been a good pass rusher. Ed Oliver is still there. So you have 2 really good pass rushers, and then you have other guys who have rotated in and played well at times. Boogie Basham had a good game last week. I think what it does, though, is like they don't have to send any extra guys. And you're right. If they had Von Miller there, I would feel amazing about the Bills and their defense getting all over Burrow. Without him, then at least Cincinnati feels like they have a chance. It's kind of up to Burrow of like how much does he want to turn back into the quarterback he was a year ago, which was holding on to the ball a lot longer to try to make a big play, and he would take a lot of sacks, and he's cut way down on that. His time to throw has gone way down this year. He makes quick decisions. He gets rid of the ball, but I think he's going to be tempted to hold the ball a little longer here, even with that bad offensive line, and see if T. Higgins and Chase especially can win those matchups. I don't think Tre'Davious White's all the way back to being what he was. Kaiir Elam had a nice game last week, but he's been very up and down this week. And like, I think Burrow's going to have his own risk assessment, kind of like Josh Allen, where it's like, I need to make some big plays here. I don't trust us to go up and down the field with 12, 13 play drives either. And so he's going to have to calculate that. And I'm with you. I kind of trust him to do that even more than Josh Allen.
They did have those elongated drives against the Ravens, which was a really kind of tough game to watch. It was a 14-play field goal drive, a 10-play touchdown, another 12-play touchdown. And, I mean, we saw what the Ravens did. They basically were just going to put 2 safeties back there and try to take away the big play. The Bills don't have Micah Hyde. I think that matters a lot. Like, I'm not sure they can run that same system. But, yeah, I think Von Miller was the guy that was basically brought here to do what he did for the Rams and to do what the Bills did against the Rams in Week 1, going back to what their DNA was. And, like, they're missing that piece. It would have been so valuable against this Bengals offensive line. And I guess Joe Burrow, I mean, I feel a little bit the same way I do about Buffalo. It's like, the Bengals offense has been hot and cold. We see them go to sleep for halves at a time. Like Buffalo, they've worked their way out of those jams. But this is, the toughest game to pick, because I don't really trust either one of these offenses compared to where I did earlier in the year.
I was going to say, like, I was curious where you come down on this. I'll ask you, Mark. And then I'd love to hear from you too, Greg. Both of you, actually.
I'm excited. That's
kind of
how the podcast
works.
What kind of questions coming from you?
Whose wild card performance concerned you more? Because neither team covered themselves with glory on wild card weekend. And you could say the Ravens outplayed Cincinnati, and it was one massive play that's 14-point swing. And then the Bills, we know the mistakes they made and barely getting by Miami.
I think Buffalo's defense was it kind of got lost in the shuffle as having a dominant game against a team with a third-string quarterback. But I would say Buffalo's overall performance concerned me more just because I feel like that version of the offense, if you're going to have the turnover-worthy plays, the turnovers, it's like I said, it's going to come back and sting you at some point. The Ravens and the Bengals, that's a division game. The Ravens have matched up well with the Bengals all season, and I just take less from it because they know each other so well, and I think the Ravens' defense was a sneaky, you know, higher-level defense than people would notice because their offense is so unfun
right.
to watch.
I have the same answer because of the opposition, but the difference is only one of them lost their left tackle in that game. Like,
yeah.
The Buffalo got out of it clean. And I think to your point about the Bills defense, they have Edmonds and Milano on the field at the same time. And they have for a lot of this year, but they both were off the field at different points. And, man, Edmonds was maybe their best defensive player last week. We know Milano's good. He's an all-pro. Like, those are two great linebackers who can help just make this Bills defense a lot more versatile in terms of stopping the run and the short passes that Burrow likes to have. But the Bengals have their guy too. Your boy, Jermaine Pratt and Logan Wilson, they're the ones who really set up that long play, and they've been great. It's such an even matchup. I'm with you. It's hard to pick.
And Tre'Davious White, obviously coming back from the knee injury, but a lot of tape dogs out there. I took note of it, checked out some of the video and the cut-ups. Said that maybe that was his best game last week, and maybe he's starting now to round into form and being that guy. He's a big-time defensive back for the Bills when healthy. We have another lock to discuss, by the way.
Oh, wow.
I feel like I know where this
Let's
is
head
going.
To the Midwest.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. It's January 20th, and I'm at Uncle Rick's house in a T-shirt. I know what you're thinking. You're a crazy human being. There's no way it's 70 degrees in January in Cincinnati, but it is. I'm pretty sure it's a sign from the heavens. I've done two other recordings at Uncle Rick's house. Mo for two, both times I took the Bills. I don't think I'm gonna make that mistake again. We're gonna ride the horse that got us here. Last year, the Bengals got us within one going into the Super Bowl. Before we fell to the mighty Dan Hanses. This year it's gonna be a little different.
I mean,
different.
It's not fair.
The Bengals take care of business. Lock that up.
There it is. Also keep in mind that he just datelined that one day in advance of right now. So maybe he knows things that we can't even know.
He's become so savvy that I'm going to be concerned when he's elevated beyond our status to host like Game Day Morning next season and the Eagle just shoots through the heavens.
And Uncle Rick's where he taped that. That's where Chris's ashes are, Chris's favorite place on Earth. I think that's, despite the 0-2 record, he was taking the Bills when he was there. I think that's a great sign for them.
Yeah, let's pick the game. This is a total coin flip. This is as hard as it gets to pick a game. And I'm just going to go with I'll go Bills. And I don't feel strongly about it, but I just think 31-30, something like that, a classic game that we will remember and talk about for a long time.
I was shocked this line went up to 5.5 during the week.
Man, that should not.
I think that's the offensive line and the concerns and the way they looked as a compromised unit as a result, Cincinnati.
I think there's something in this Cincinnati team's DNA that is special and that they can overcome that. I'm going to have them winning. I think they can attack a couple weaknesses with the Bills in terms of the receiver depth and
the
cornerback depth. I'm not locking them up, but
something
I am picking
about.
Them to win. Let's go, Bengals.
It's just a tough one because I kind of think Buffalo's journey, they're just so built to like not look perfect, but get out of these situations over and over and over. And it's like, it would be sad to see them go. But I just see something like Cincinnati 37, Buffalo 34, and like an absolute blazing showdown.
Okay.
Which means it will be 10-7.
We need this game to be a classic. I want it. I need it. I love it.
I would be obviously okay with Cincinnati winning. I'd be happy for Nick and all the family and everybody out there in Cincinnati at the zoo. But I just think it's the Bills' year and the Bills' time. I've kind of wavered on that, and I've said the same thing about Cincinnati, too. But again, this is a tough one to pick. Let's take a break, and we'll hit the last game.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
All right, welcome back, and it's time now for the Sunday Drive presented by Toyota, and we're going to talk about the Cowboys and 49ers. It is the Sunday 6:30 p.m. Eastern kickoff game. It's Burkhart. Here are the announcers. Burkhart Olsen, Cowboys Niners. Nance Romo, Bengals Bills. Davis Moose, Giants Eagles. Tarico Collinsworth, Jags Chiefs. So you got big-time announcers, too. See, that's this is what this weekend's about.
We're at the best of the best. We're at that juncture in the season.
The best of the best, except for Mark Sanchez.
Well, I think Mark Sanchez will be there next year. We keep saying that, and I believe it.
And you know what? Al, if you give Al Mark Sanchez. How about that? Al and Mark Sanchez.
That would be an interesting team.
And I love, who's that? Mark does it with Amin, is it?
Coogler, I think.
Coogler is excellent.
Yeah, I'm taking Coogler right now.
Yeah, it's not a Coogler thing. You're saying it's Al thing. Needs some Mark Sanchez
but
in his life.
But you just stuck him with, you know, Dungy.
Yeah.
Hey.
Dungeon, Tony Dungeon.
Sometimes things
Tony
change,
Dungeon.
Though. Sometimes things change. We got, you know, there's no Tom Brady this weekend. You know, there is a Dak Prescott.
All right, let's get to it. What?
What are we getting, Tom Brady in the booth?
Coogler is Dak in this scenario. All
right, let's talk about Dak because he is the shining hope for the Dallas Cowboys against the Niners. The Niners, who, by the way, to your point about Bengals-Bills, like, the Bills are a bigger favorite than the Niners right now. I guess that's Vegas and the Cowboys and all
the
that
Dallas
juice that they get. But, like, that's surprising to me because I would think the Niners, winners of 11 straight, they should be the team that everyone is locked in on right now as the best team in football. That's how I feel. And as good as the Cowboys played, Greggy, last week against the Tampa Bay Bucks, this ain't the Tampa Bay Bucks. And Dak Prescott, to give this team a chance to win, almost needs to – bring back that level of performance. Can he do it against San Francisco? It's a big difference.
It is. I think he can because he's that good of a quarterback.
Man, you love yourself some Dak.
Mm-hmm.
You are a Dak-aholic, brah. It's like Drew Lock number one,
no.
Geno two, Dak.
I'm definitely not a Drew Lock fan. I mean, I think Dak's high level is just higher than he's given credit for, that his high level is right there with the top quarterbacks in the league. A graphic went around on Thursday on Twitter of our network, Total Access, where they're like breaking it down. Purdy or Dak? Who's got the better, you know, different attributes? And Purdy wins at 3 out of 5 that he's got better poise. Give me a break. Like, Dak Prescott's poise.
Wait, who?
They gave it to Purdy.
Who's voting on that?
They gave it to accuracy to Dak. Have you watched Dak Prescott play football? You can come up with some things he's not great at, but if you give him time, he's the most accurate guy. And they gave decision-making to Purdy. It's just like, come on,
bro. It seems
bro.
A little premature to have Purdy in those type of I'd conversations, agree. But I love that program. I love NFL Network. I love my job.
I do, too. I just disagree with this.
I also love it.
Particular analysis. I think he's good enough to beat a great defense. We've seen the 49ers give up points in bunches occasionally. They did it to the Chiefs. That first half to the Seahawks, they went up and down the field. Like, I think it can happen.
Greg, I feel like you've been a little down on the Niners compared to where I am.
He's not a Purdy believer.
I've picked them every week as they win, and they're huge favorites, and I'm picking them this week. Spoiler.
You are picking them.
Yes.
All right.
Brock bias.
I'm just waiting to see someone slow down San Francisco for more than like a half. Like, nice job, Seattle. But then the doors fall off because you can't hang with this team. And it's like Dallas to me.
They were on pace for 500 yards before they took off against Seattle.
I know. It's like it's even their half where they struggle.
Right.
They're still doing what they do. And I think it's a huge game for like the Trevon Diggs and like Leighton Van Der Esch's of the world where like Diggs misses tackles. And it's like you now have Deebo Samuel and you've got Christian McCaffrey who can flip-flop in the slot, flip-flop in the backfield, both do the same things. They are yard-after-the-catch monsters. And, I mean, There are wide open holes created for both of them where you've got wide receivers blocking downfield. Last week, Purdy threw for 179 passing yards to wide open receivers, which is the third most by any quarterback in the playoffs in the next-gen stats era. The thing about Purdy is, like, I don't know if he has all those traits better than the next quarterback. I don't really care. It's just he's in this perfect position where he's delivering absolute gems inside of a system that just creates these opportunities. And Kyle Shanahan's never had this offense. Not this way. Not with this many star players. And it's on Dallas to go essentially, everyone's talking about Dak Prescott. It's all anyone can focus on. It's like Dak can be pretty great and they can score a ton of points. But you've got to stop San Francisco from dropping 38 on you. I don't love it. I think the Dallas is a really spicy challenge for the Niners, the most in a long, long time. But like, until someone slows both sides of this ball down, this is the best team in the NFL in my book.
Yeah, they have not lost since October 23rd. And they've scored in the last 4 weeks, San Francisco 37, 37, 38, 41. Now, we know the Dallas defense, what it's capable of. I said this last week about Micah Parsons and, you know, go kick Tom Brady's ass and win that game single-handedly. Once again, you're going to need your best players to kind of really make big plays. Parsons got to step up. Maybe Trayvon Diggs has a huge interception or a pick six, something like that. I think the Cowboys are going to have to steal a possession or two. I think a special team score. I think it's that type of matchup. And I have respect for Dallas, but that's the way I'm at too. If the lock competition wasn't about making up ground at this point,
really?
San Francisco would have been my lock of the week, because I think they will handle their business here and do it in fashion, that double-digit points fashion.
That's shocking to me. And, you know, I could see it. None of these games, like almost any result isn't going to totally surprise me. But I look at this Cowboys team and I look at, let's say, EPA per play for the season. These are the best two defenses in the league over the course of the season. Dallas has been up and down, but we've seen what they can do. They have a coach in Dan Quinn who knows Kyle Shanahan well. I don't know if that's good, bad, or indifferent, but they obviously know each other very well from their time together in Atlanta. And he's very creative, coming up with game plan specific ways to highlight his great players in Micah Parsons. And they have great players, DeMarcus Lawrence, certainly. And they have a lot of safeties that can be versatile. I just feel like there could be a bad Purdy game in here. I don't expect it. And I do worry for the Cowboys that they've worked a lot harder to get here. Last week, for instance, Parsons
played... I think San Francisco might disagree with that, but go ahead.
I just mean that they're not playing much lately. In the last 2 weeks, for instance, Bosa's played 45 snaps, I think, or 60 total snaps combined. They got to sit their guys, and they were like rotating in week 18. The Cowboys are on short rest. Parsons played more on Monday night, like 15, 20 more snaps than any of the 49ers defensive linemen have played in the last two games combined, which is just, I think that is a factor here, that the 49ers are rested and ready.
I keep reading that and like, yeah, it certainly seems like a logical factor. These are human bodies we're talking about, but I don't think we really know the effect on Micah Parsons is a superstar. Like, I don't imagine, because he had 20 more snaps than the Niners defensive lineman, that we're going to get a worn out, broken down version of Micah
Parsons. He's always like hobbling at the end of the game.
Well, I think he's dealt with injuries.
Yeah, but he's not 100%.
This isn't the Cowboys defense that gave up under 20 to start the season 5 weeks in a row. I mean, they gave up 40 to the Jaguars. They were lashed for 34 against the Gardner Minshew-led Eagles. They flatlined against the Commanders. This is all in the last month. They played a broken-down Titans team and looked good. And then they played a broken-down Bucks team and the defense showed up. It's like, it's the same thing I feel about the Eagles in reverse. For the Cowboys, that Bucks team that was ready to be shipped out to sea was dominated by the best game the Cowboys have played on offense and defense in a while. So they look good, but it's like, is this really, do we trust Dallas doing this 2 or 3 weeks in a row?
The stranger things happen in the playoffs. It happens all the time. It feels like it actually happens almost every year. A team that you don't think of much of wild card weekend all of a sudden is playing in February. Like, it certainly could happen, and I don't want to rule it out. It's just more respect that I have for San Francisco. I want to talk about a major subplot of this game. It gets overlooked all the time. We talked about it a little bit on Tuesday. The Cowboys kicking situation. So I threw out the idea of why don't teams have backup kickers for how important the position is. Carry two kickers, have them both on the active roster, give yourself some wiggle room. They're not doing that, but they did they did kind of have a half measure. The Cowboys signed kicker Tristan Vizcaino to the practice squad this week, and then they had both guys kick in practice, and Brett Maher, who of course set the NFL record by missing four extra points in their wild card win on Monday. He's kicked very well in practice, apparently. Vizcaino was meh. So it certainly seems like they're rolling forward with Maher. It's just, and I saw something on Twitter, a nice little sideline back and forth with CeeDee Lamb pumping up Maher, telling him not to hang his head from the Monday night game. That one of the most kind of nerve-wracking subplots for me as a football fan will be watching that first kick by Maher, because it could dictate the flow of the game in a lot of different directions, not just his misses and makes, but how Mike McCarthy has to roll out his offense.
Yeah, I mean, watching a kicker in this situation where you have no idea what the result's going to be, it very much feels the same way the audience feels anxiety watching like a public speaker crumble at the podium. That happened to us a couple years ago on some sort of event we went to. It's just like you're all rooting for this person to get out of this situation.
Wait, what is this?
Well, I don't know where it was. Some corporate thing we went to where like the speaker just had a bit of a meltdown. And it's like I remember being like a 16-year-old where that happened to me one time at some stupid speech I had to give and was like, you just flatline. And
it's before,
like,
you got your degree in showmanship.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was like, I didn't think that degree existed back then. But now it's like, I feel that way with Maher. I always think about like Bill Parcells saying, you treat certain players one way, others another. You can go at someone and it motivates them. If you go at the next guy, you break them. And like, is Maher the guy that like thrives because you brought in someone to kick against him in practice and everyone's watching? Like, what if someone said, hey, Mark, we're going to bring in another guy to do the show for you today while you stand out behind the glass?
We actually have. He's right outside the door. Let's bring him in. Carl? No.
All right. I'm just saying, you know what I mean? It's like, that would not motivate me.
I'd be
like,
give me a
don't look, too. We're
like, wait, look, Carl's here? Even I look like, that sounds great.
Marv Sessler, let's hear from McCarthy at practice on Thursday about the idea of bringing in another kicker this week.
It doesn't take anything away from, you know, our trust in Brett. I just think, you know, it's part of the responsibility, you know, player acquisitions, a 365 day. This is nothing out of the norm for us. But, you know, I think the fact that, you know, I have a chance to watch Tristan, you know, I'm you know, looking forward to seeing him work today. I think he's a talented young kicker. So, but yeah, I just think we just wanted to make sure that we're, you know, in position to, you know, just always adding depth to our football team.
How would you know from a couple practice kicks, too?
Oh, Zaddy, you're so extra.
Right. Maher's probably fine in practice. They could keep them both active. That would be unconventional. You'd lose a special team spot. I think in this case, they could convince themselves maybe that was worth it on Sunday. Otherwise, you just got them in here just to see them in practice and, you know, hope that Maher survives. My thing with this game, though, and it's the game previous, and it's why I love divisional round weekend. I think we all do. Both these teams can win the Super Bowl. And so I'm just trying to give the Cowboys that credit.
Okay.
I think there's sick. I would be surprised personally if the Jaguars or the Giants win the Super Bowl. But I feel like every other team that's playing this weekend can win the Super Bowl.
And I agree.
And the Cowboys' highest level is pretty high. Like, we talk about all these 49ers guys, but it's like, I know the offensive line for the Cowboys is all shuffled around. That's a little worrisome. Tyler Smith now at left tackle, but he had played there before.
Played great, though, last
week.
Right,
McGovern has moved all around. He was left guard, then he was fullback, center, now he's back at left guard. But they still have, like, a Hall of Fame right guard. That's a talented player. Tyron Smith, talented player. I don't know if the 49ers have guys like that up front. They have Tony Pollard, who's not Christian McCaffrey, but he's pretty damn close. Per snap, he's one of the best running backs in the NFL. CeeDee Lamb, I would take over every 49ers receiver. They don't have the depth, certainly, but they have a great tight end in Dalton Schultz. Yes, I would. Now, I think CeeDee Lamb is at that level. I love CeeDee Lamb.
Pollard, about equal to CMC.
I didn't say about equal. I'm saying
Top three, top four, though.
He's like in terms of what he does per snap, like, he has been getting it done. He is a reasonable
Do you trust them to, like, lower the workload for Zeke? Because we've been talking about it for weeks. It's like,
Last week, but no, not
Who's
enough.
Who's the left tackle for the Cowboys on
It's going to be their rookie, Tyler Smith, who's played well at left tackle for most of the season. He's moved around. They've got concerns, certainly, but I just think they have a chance. They have a chance here, and they have a chance to make it.
All right, let's pick the game. I've already said what I think. So 36-24 Niners to the NFC title game.
I've got Niners 35-21.
I have it 27-23 49ers, which is actually over the line now. The line has moved all down to 3.5. People are betting on the Cowboys.
All that, and then
I'll just say this: we're nobody's underdog.
Well, yeah.
Well, I mean, what are we even doing here?
What is our predictions?
If you're going to pump them up for 15 straight minutes and then pick against them, what are we doing?
I try to stay consistent on all our platforms, you know, and we got our picks in on
Wednesday.
But
I think Dan's saying that's inconsistent.
Maybe I could flip it, is what you're saying?
I don't know.
Yeah.
We won't hold it against you if you're looking to win your picks competition on the other show.
You know where it is. Yeah.
Just, you know, it's fine.
Game Day View. Check it out. That's my showman move here.
Game Day View with the great Rachel Bonetta.
She was at our show.
Patrick
Claibon.
Freeland.
It's a great show.
You know who I missed, though, at our show, and I wish was there because she's so great behind the glass every show, is Parker. I wish she had made it.
Parker's done unbelievable work all season long behind the glass.
I assumed she was there.
Yeah.
I had a seat saved for her. It was just sitting there.
Oh, that
vacant.
Was that lonely little.
It's like, you know, the old the show, like the TV show where the kid's in his big their concert and looks over and then dad's seat's empty.
Yeah. I normally assume that Parker was very busy doing something else, not at the show.
Well, we can't get everything we want in life. But we will get great football this weekend, and it's going to be the best football of the season. And that was Sunday Drive presented by Toyota. Get ready for some great football, everybody, as we say goodbye. Thank you to everybody for listening, watching, coming to our live show. We're very lucky. Thanks for keeping us around. Until Sunday night, heed the call.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.